This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Now for Krug. Near side for Pastrnak. Pastrnak waltzes down side of the slot, side of the net, back in behind the goal. Still has it out in front of the shot by Dabrowski. Scores. Jake Dabrowski standing all alone on the weak side. Pastrnak fooled everybody. Put it back out in front as he carried it from the side of the slot around the net to the other side. It's the second power play goal of the night for the Bruins, and they lead it 2-1. The final score tonight, the Boston Bruins 2, the Winnipeg Jets 1.
As the old saying goes, close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We're pleased to be with you for the next 3 hours. We're all about the Winnipeg Jets, looking back at last night's defeat at the hands of the Boston Bruins. A very close game, as I alluded to off the top with the horseshoes and hand grenades comment. We'll get you set for this evening's contest against the division rival St. Louis Blues as part of Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets game day. The Blues coming into town off of a defeat last night to the Edmonton Oilers. All about the Jets, all about the NHL. We want to hear from you. You can send us your comments via text. Send your text to 129090, where standard messaging rates will apply. You can also reach us in studio via Twitter. You can send your tweets to @IllegalCurve. We want to hear what's on your mind with regard to the Winnipeg Jets and last night's defeat at the hands of the Boston Bruins. And of course, if you're just catching up on everything Winnipeg Jets related, there's only one spot to go for all your latest news and information, and that is IllegalCurve.com. Dave Minuk, good morning. Is it possible, my friend, that you're even more handsome than you were when I last saw you 10 hours ago?
Wow. You must be desperate knowing that it's just you and I today, and you want to be really nice to me. So,
well, I'd prefer that you be an active and participatory individual for the next 3 hours. It'll make my life a lot easier if that occurs, I got to tell you.
Yeah, but I think what you're alluding to is the fact that we've spent a lot of time together.
Yes.
Since yesterday's game and now today again.
I haven't had a good date weekend like this in a long time. Apologies to my wife for that, I suppose. Ezra Ginsberg away from the program. He'll be back next week, I presume.
We're hoping.
If he's allowed back in the country, we'll see. You know, that's always a 50-50 proposition at best when it comes to Mr. Ginsberg. Let's start with last night's Jets-Bruins contest. You know, both teams obviously coming back from the bye week. Both teams hadn't played in about 9 days since before the All-Star break, with the exception, of course, of Mark Scheifele and Hellebuck, who didn't start for the Jets, obviously, last night. Laurent Brossoit getting the start. From my estimation, obviously, the defeat is not what the Winnipeg Jets needed, because they have no margin of error to speak of, but that was certainly, if not the most entertaining game we've seen at Bell MTS Place this season, then in the top two or top three with last night's contest.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you, Drew. I think that was one of those games that you're sitting there thinking to yourself, well, first of all, I was left with the impression, especially after that second period, that these were two teams that played each other all the time.
And didn't like each other,
because the level of animosity that was on display, I mean, fight after fight. You know, Gabriel Bourque, I don't know if we've seen him fight this year. And then you've got Nikolaj Ehlers fighting. You've got Lucas Sabiza fighting. Like, it was just, I mean, guys are standing up for each other. You know, Mark Scheifele takes a hit. Neil Pionk fights. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, every single guy was like, on both teams, was really invested. And obviously, you know, you want to kick off this portion of the schedule and on a positive manner. And Boston's, you know, a juggernaut. They're first in the Atlantic division, so they're a very good team. And you know, but again, like I said, you didn't really know what to expect. And then it was a good first period. Both teams, I thought, were playing well. And you know, there's not really, the only real thing, if you're a Jets fan, that you're really going to lament, I think, is that going 0-for-6 on the power play.
That's the especially, difference of the game.
Special especially teams. On a 5-on-3, they had, you know, opportunities.
Yeah, multiple 5-on-3s. I mean, right. It was a 5-on-3, a short break, and then another 5-on-3.
Right. So those are the ones that you're going to lament, because really that was the difference in the game. Obviously, you couldn't score on your power play. They were able to score on their power plays. I thought 5-on-5, the Jets were very good. I thought they had a lot of opportunity. I mean, you know, it's funny, right? Hockey's such a game of inches, and Patrick Laine hit, what, the crossbar at least once, post two or three times. I think he had, what, 13 shots in the game or something like that. Mm-hmm. So he was firing. He looked really good. I thought, you know, the Jets just had opportunities. You know,
Mark Scheifele's got a goal on his stick.
Right.
And then, out of, you know, Tuukka Rask is beat. He's out of the play.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, Jeremy Lauzon, probably the most unheralded member of the Bruins defense, mm-hmm. comes out of nowhere and makes a great save when Scheifele's got, you know, a yawning cage available to him. You know, and Lauzon comes out of nowhere and sort of takes that goal from the grasp of Scheifele.
Yeah, 100%. And you're just kind of left there thinking to yourself, like, you know, moral victories are not something that the Jets can really hang their hat on at this point. You mm-hmm. know, they're falling a little bit out of it right now. They're, you know, 3-7-0 in their last 10. They've obviously lost five games in a row. Now just 25-23-4. I mean, look, you're only 4 points back of Arizona. But at the same time, who's played one more game? But you've also got Nashville, Chicago in between you. You've got Minnesota, who's only 2 points back of you. San Jose.
With two games in hand.
Two games in hand. Yeah. So, and the other teams have games in hand as well. Nashville still has two games in hand on you. Chicago has a game in hand on you. So you're not in a position right now to be hanging your hat, I would say, on moral victories. But mm-hmm. having said that, and I think this is what Paul Maurice's point was after the game, that the Jets are, they would look back, as someone asked him in the post game, whether, you know, he kind of just moves, you know, there's frustration by not gaining at least a point, but, you know, you just move forward. And he said, well, no, there's a lot of things you want to look back on that game that we did in a positive way. Power play, I suspect, is probably not. Well, actually, they did generate chances. I mean, they generated a lot of chances on their power play, mm-hmm. but they just weren't obviously able to capitalize. So, I mean, and some of that is Tuukka Rask. I thought Tuukka Rask was very good in the game last night. So you have to give him credit. And again, like I said, It's a game of inches. I mean, if Patrick Laine hits a couple of those nets like we're used to, as yeah. opposed to
it's 2 inches,
you know,
to the right, it's a goal, right. as opposed that's to right. 2 inches so, where it hits iron.
I mean, it, you know, and then we could be talking about a totally different outcome. But at the end of the day, I thought it was a very good game from both teams.
In terms of quality of game, this is probably one of the best games the Jets played all season. I mean, this is a team that, you know, remember Paul Maurice earlier in the year, however many months ago, that now said, you know, this team was not going to be an analytical darling this season.
I feel like that was, well, he said that, I think, a few times, but yeah, it wasn't that long ago, but maybe 2 months ago.
Yeah. You look at the underlying numbers from last night, mm-hmm. and the Jets had one of their best performances of the year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that their Corsi was up over 60%, you know, at 5-on-5.
Yep.
You know, that their expected goals was, you know, a goal 1.25, and the Bruins was only 0.96. So a lot of the underlying numbers, which of course the Jets have been horrendous at mm-hmm. this season, mm-hmm. were positive for the Jets in a turn of fortune that we didn't necessarily expect. We know that when the Jets were succeeding in November, it was largely based on goaltending and, you know, sort of flipping the script when it comes to your expected performance based on the analytical side of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Last night was the exception to that rule, which goes to show you that in a small sample size, anything can happen. The Bruins obviously end up with the win, to your point. You know, moral victories are not good enough for this team right now. You've lost five games in a row. You are struggling in the standings. Sure, you're within striking distance, but you're closer to being in the bottom of the Central Division
mm-hmm.
than you are to being in a playoff spot. And that's sort of, you know, if there was ever a game where the Jets needed to find a way to get that second goal, particularly after DeBrusque gives the Bruins the lead on that freak play where Kopp and Boteto get their skates sort of tangled together, and they
play, by the way, just sorry to interrupt you, yeah. a play that every single player after the game had said they'd never seen anything like that before.
You wouldn't be able to, if you practice that, if you yeah. tried to do that.
I think Andrew Kopp said one in a million.
Yeah, one in a million is exactly right, and that might even be a little
higher than that.
You know, that you could never recreate that if you were trying to do it in the course of a game flow. C'est la vie, you know, bleep happens.
Yeah.
The Bruins score. The Jets aren't, but, you know, even before that, though, you talk about the power plays and you talk about the 5-on-3 opportunities. You should never be in a 1-1 situation at that point in time. It should never be a tie game. The Bruins had a 5-on-3 opportunity. What happened? They scored on it.
Mm.
That was the game. That was the tying goal. Mm-hmm. Bergeron's goal.
Right.
The Jets have multiple 5-on-3 opportunities. They're not able to. Sure, they generated some chances, but I was sitting there and I was telling you, I thought that the alignment and the aggressiveness on the 5-on-3 was not what it needed to be. I thought that it was too, all the play was still too far outside. It was too high in the offensive zone. They needed to get lower down where you have the man advantage, where you have the two-man advantage. I thought Pionk was still sort of walking the blue line as opposed to walking sort of the top of the circles, you know, when you have that 5-on-3. And, you know, when you compared the Jets' 5-on-3 alignment and their aggressiveness versus the Bruins' 5-on-3 alignment and the aggressiveness, I thought the Bruins handled that opportunity a lot better than the Jets did. Obviously, you know, if Laine doesn't hit the post and if, you know, Scheifele doesn't whiff on a couple of opportunities that he usually is quite, you know, quite adept at scoring on, it's a different contest. But I still think that the Jets, just given those glorious power play opportunities, have to be kicking themselves for not taking advantage of it and for ending up that a freak play like the Kopp and Boteto one can indirectly or directly lead to the DeBrusk winning goal.
Yeah, I mean, look, at the end of the day, that's what we're going to be talking about for probably the majority of this segment, Drew, is the fact that, you know, you're lamenting the special teams battle because, as you already expressed earlier, a few minutes earlier, this is a 5-on-5 game the Jets could be happy with. They, you know, they really held the advantage over the Bruins for the most part. So, It was a good game. I mean, again, you know, you lose Matthew Perreault in the second period. He goes out from that hit. It was a fairly clean hit. He just wasn't expecting it, and he went down the tunnel. Nobody from the Jets room, at least, was complaining about the hit. They thought it was just a hockey play. And, you know, Mark Scheifele, I mean, McAvoy just blew up Mark Scheifele. Was that the first period? I mean, it was, that was his physical game.
That was in the first. That was the first fight of a game that had 75 penalty minutes. Yeah. You don't see NHL games have 75 penalty minutes.
And again,
with a lot of,
if you would have told me tonight, if you would have switched the games and said the Jets and Blues had that kind of emotion built into the game,
makes sense.
I would have been like, okay, that makes a lot of sense. You know, first round playoffs,
Central Division rivals,
you're desperate for points. Like, that makes a lot of sense. But Boston and Winnipeg, I was like, what's going on? And I know that they obviously relatively recently played each other in Boston. But it was funny because after the game, Paul Maurice basically said that game was kind of an anomaly because it wasn't that physical of an affair in Boston.
Well, you know what? I think what I didn't get an opportunity to ask the Bruins post game about this, but I wanted to. Sort of goes to show you about when hockey players are not in the middle of the grind and they're more rested. And they have some legs. You know, 82 games is too long of a season. I think if you asked every player, they would say it's too many games and too short of a window, and it's a slog. Especially, you know, when you're at game 50 and game 60, and it's just every second night, and you don't have the legs, you don't have the jump. Both these teams, obviously, you know, you're not going to have 9 days between games because that's not realistic. But if the season's only 70 games long,
well, good luck.
I know. And this is just but I'm just talking about for quality of hockey.
Yeah, of course.
If the players had a little more rest and they'd have so much more jump on a game in, game out basis, you would see more of a physical contest and more of the, you know, the rough stuff that you saw last night, which I was fine with. I mean, a lot of it is a little stupid in that you get a clean hit and then somebody has to come and avenge your honor.
Literally just being shown on the television right now.
There you go. So, I mean, it's a little bit stupid, but I promise you that nobody at Bell MTS Place last night felt as though they didn't get their money's worth in the game, despite a loss. Despite a loss, it was a Friday night. We've heard all the complaints, and we agree with them regarding the schedule and how it's been a bit of a lousy home schedule this year and everything else. Last night was a game that everybody, despite a loss, probably said, "Yeah, that was a good hockey game," and there was passion and there was energy. And too many nights there aren't passion and energy, and a lot of that has to do with the scheduling of the league as opposed to the players themselves. I mean, you can't, you know, at some point in time, your tank is only so full. No matter how full it is. Coming back off 9 days off, obviously both teams had tanks that were full and both teams were ready to get at it, and both teams played with an edge from the start of the game, and it was an entertaining hockey game last night.
Absolutely. I think one of the biggest takeaways right now, though, is the fact that the Jets are just making, you know, Bell MTS plays a little too friendly Manitoba, and the fact is their record is 11-12-2
not good
at home. And you've got to be, you know, I mean, look, some of the teams that are ahead of them don't have the greatest record, but, like, you know, you look at Dallas, 16-8-2 at home. Colorado 14-7-4 at home. St. Louis 17-4-4 at home.
Yeah, 14-6-4 for the Minnesota Wild.
Right. So, well, we know the Wild, they were red hot to start. They didn't. They only had the one loss until they played the Jets, who gave them their second regulation loss at XL Energy.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is that, you know, you can't be a below 500 team at home.
What is it? It was 9 of 10. And now,
9 of 10.
So now it's 8 of 9.
Yeah.
I mean, again, you have to, of those 8 of 9 at home, you have to win what? If you really want to get back into the race, 6 at least.
You have to win 6.
You know, maybe, you know, 7 if you really want it. I mean,
then, no, I mean, but look, I mean, at the end of the day, you've got, now the Blues are coming in off a loss to the Oilers last night.
Yes.
In Edmonton. Now you've got an opportunity.
And the Blues won't get into town, probably didn't get into town until what? 2:30 in the morning?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they don't have to call your customs, obviously, but at the same time, yeah, it's not, I mean, the game would have been a little bit later.
The game would have ended at 11 o'clock central time.
Right.
Because it's an hour behind.
Yeah. By the time they get here, it's probably 2 o'clock.
By the time you get on the bus, get on the plane, fly here, 2:30, maybe even 3 a.m. I mean, this is when they talk about a quote unquote scheduled loss on your schedule, this could be one of those for the Blues. And the Jets have to take advantage of that. Well, no, we'll talk more about that game later on in the program. But the Jets have to say, bottle the effort.
That's right.
That we had last night.
Yep.
Albeit in a losing effort. Bottle that effort. Replicate that game.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be in a good
and
position.
I think that was the point that Paul Maurice was making to the media after the game. Was the fact that if you can take what you did in that game for the most part. Again, power plays aside.
Mm-hmm.
If you can take that 5-on-5 effort from that game and go forward with it, then you're likely to have success more often than not.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Before we move on, I thought one of the big things that I noticed is that the Jets' defense seemed a lot more active, pinching, aggressive at the offensive blue line, similar to what we saw a lot last year. We know this year it's been all about sort of passive at the offensive blue line and the Jets' defense not being aggressive, getting back to trying to protect in the defensive zone and you know, make up for some of your defensive shortcomings. And we know that that hasn't worked a lot of this year. We know that the Jets, you know, have been pretty woeful. I thought yesterday you saw a much more aggressive Jets defense, particularly at the offensive blue line. A couple of times, Dmitry Kulikov was pinching, and he was even down low for a backdoor play at some point in the game.
I think in the first period.
But Tedo aggressive at the blue line. Pionk and Morrissey as well. So I don't know if that is a aberration, if that's guys who have just a little bit more joie de vivre because they're coming off of a long break, or if that's a fundamental change that the team has made as a result of the first, you know, 50 or so games not being very successful. That's something I'm going to really keep a close eye on tonight, Tuesday against Nashville, to see if that is a fundamental change and going back to more of a way they played last year than the way they had been playing this year.
Maybe they were listening to us last week where we were suggesting that they needed to open it up.
We were talking about that. We talked about that with Sean Tierney, of course, when we were looking at some of the Jets' numbers. But that really was one of my takeaways.
Yeah.
Regardless of the scoreboard last night, it certainly seemed that the Jets were way more aggressive at the offensive blue line. It's probably something
you're playing to your strength.
Well, it's something you need to do at some point in time. It's clear that if you're trying to go into this defensive shell, which they had been for the vast majority of the season, it wasn't working.
Mm-hmm.
So why not try and open things up a little bit, try and be a little more aggressive and keep the play in the offensive zone rather than being on your heels and hanging your goalie up to dry in terms of a shooting gallery. Now, you might be hanging them out to dry in terms of odd man rushes or turnovers at the offensive blue line, but you might as well play a little bit to your strength if the end result is going to be similar on the back end. Something to keep an eye out for tonight against the Blues, Tuesday against the Predators. Tonight's Blues-Jets matchup is brought to you, of course, as part of Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets Game Day. 6 o'clock puck drop, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. When we come back, the latest edition of Insider Trading, or one from earlier this week, rather, talked about Dustin Byfuglien. We'll see what the big number 33 and his future has in store, potentially, according to the insiders. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Well, challenges is nothing new to Shoveldayoff and the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, if you look at this season, you go back to the offseason, he's faced nothing but challenges. But most definitely, the Winnipeg Jets are in the market for a specific top four defenseman. Now, it could be a rental player. It could be a player with some term. They're not ruling out anything at this point. But it does get complicated when you look at some of the scenarios that hover around the organization. You still have the Dustin Byfuglien scenario. That has not been rectified yet. You've got the injury front, which includes Lowry and Little, both long-term. If Brian Little comes back and in the mix with the Winnipeg Jets, then Shoveldayoff may have to use one of his current roster players to acquire that top four piece on the blue line.
from insider trading earlier this week, TSN Hockey insider Darren Dreger talking about the Jets and their search for a top four defenseman. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. We're part of Mr. Lube, Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets and the Blues tonight in a Central Division tilt, although the two teams have a country mile between them in the Central Division standings. The Blues up at the top of the division with a healthy 8-point lead over second place Colorado. The Jets a mere 16 points back of the St. Louis Blues.
What's 16 points?
Among friends, it's not that much, apparently. In any event, that was from insider trading. I believe that was either Monday or Tuesday of this week. And Dreger alluding to the Jets' search for a top four defenseman. And, you know, I have no reason to doubt Darren Dreger and his veracity on his comments, and I believe they probably are. But I think every team in the league is looking for a top four defenseman, unless you're, you know, the Detroit Red Wings, the San Jose Sharks, or the Los Angeles Kings right now, teams that are clearly out of it. You know, do you expect the Jets? We've talked about this for the last number of weeks. I mean, you're out of a playoff spot right now.
Mm-hmm.
Is Kevin Cheveldayoff going to use this next 8 of 9 games at home to really test if you're going to be in that market come the trade deadline a few weeks from now?
Well, I think you have to. I think that there's, I mean, the fact is that you can't make a statement either way. I think that most people, a lot of Jets fans, at least the ones I'm, and these are more probably the more vocal ones that I'm seeing, are suggesting that at this point, given what this team is there any point to sacrificing the future for, you know, a shot at the playoffs? And you know, without the lack of expectation that, you know, you're going to be able to do something. Now, of course, a hot goalie can do a lot, as the Jets showed in November, but you're sitting there going, does it make a lot of sense to sacrifice, you know, just for this, for, you know, some short-term gain for some long-term pain? To me, the only time you would suggest that something like this makes any sense really is if you're getting someone with some term that's going to make sense for your team. Because we talked about it on last week. We've talked about it for the last couple of weeks.
Yeah.
The truth is that this is going to be a very, look, there's going to be turnover next year. No, the only guys who are on contract are Morrissey, Pionk, Dahlstrom.
Yeah,
has a year left.
Yeah.
And well, Niku's an RFA.
Yeah.
And Pullman's got one more year.
Yeah.
So you've got,
well, the plug-in guys.
Yeah, plugs.
You said it, not me. But the Betetos and the Spezas and the guys who are stopgap measures are not in the,
right,
should not be in the long-term future plans.
Well, and the reality is, look, you've got Heinola, you've got Sandberg. We don't know whether they're going to be playing next year, but
you know, with, you know, Sandberg's a nice prospect, but everybody that's penciling him into the NHL next year probably needs to just take a little bit of a breath.
Well, we don't. I mean, look, we don't really know. I mean, the fact is, he spent an extra year in college, so I mean, we'll see if he's ready to make that jump. He could have to play in the AHL for some. That wouldn't be, again,
There's
a laundry list of guys who have had AHL, a year or two in the AHL before they made that jump, and it hasn't been detrimental to their career.
No.
I believe the number is like 80-something percent of NHLers. So the reality is that a lot of guys have to do that, and it's not a bad thing. I'm just simply saying that if you're looking for towards the future, if you're going to make a trade, if you're going to trade a piece, you know, or if you're going to consider trading your top first round pick, which I don't think the Jets are going to do, but if you're even thinking that, then it, obviously it's not something that you're just doing it for a short term gain. You're looking with a long term. You're saying we want to add a piece. Now, of course, a lot of talk is Travis Hamonic. Now, not in terms of a trade. He's going to be a UFA at the end of the season.
Sure.
So that makes a lot of sense. He's obviously a Manitoban, and you know, there was some talk of him when he wanted out of New York, of him maybe potentially coming to Winnipeg as one of his options.
Mm-hmm.
So that would make a lot of sense, and he'd obviously be a nice fit here. And
if you go down the right side with, you know, Pionk, Hamonic, Pullman next year.
Yeah. Or Niku.
And Niku. I mean, Niku, of course, can play both sides. Yeah. He prefers the right side.
Yeah.
But if all of a sudden you're going down the right side with that, and that's assuming that Byfuglien is not a member of the Jets next year, because I'm on record of saying I believe he's played his final game for the Winnipeg Jets. I don't believe he plays another game for this organization for the remainder of his career.
Mm.
So, you know, obviously Hamonic, you know, it makes sense. 30 years old, fits sort of nicely in that right side, a bit of a bridge to some of the younger guys who might
that's
be
right.
eventually
not,
coming through.
Then you're not relying on Sandberg. You're not relying on Heinola to be the guys next year, face that kind of pressure.
That's right. They can ease their way into the lineup and everything else. I mean, look, this Jets team, in a best case scenario, are squeaking into the playoffs, and maybe they're winning a round. Maybe. I mean, I know that the mantra is and the talk is, you know, get in there and anything can happen. And yeah, to some extent, there's some truth to that, but not with this defense. Not with this defense as currently constructed. And it's unlikely that there's going to be such an impactful defenseman available via trade that it's going to change the entire fortunes of your team.
Right.
I mean, you know, the best case scenario for this team is probably a first round victory. That's their ceiling from my perspective here right now. So you'd be foolish to go crazy and try and, you know, make moves that isn't going to elevate your ceiling, because there's no, I don't see them making any move significant enough that it changes their ceiling.
Well, and again, you know, the biggest question marks are Brian Little and Dustin Byfuglien.
Sure.
And of course, look, it's Darren Dreger was on with the guys. Well, not the guys, sorry, because Huss wasn't there, but he was on with Rick, and he basically said, you know, when he was on earlier with those guys, I think January 3rd, he had said something like Dustin Byfuglien was ready to test out the ankle. And then when he was on last week. He basically said he hasn't been, as far as he knew, he hadn't been on the ice.
Today's February 1st.
No, I know. So the point, I agree with you, Drew. So The point is that it's getting to the point now where if you're not hearing about Dustin Byfuglien testing out the ankle.
He's not testing it.
Right. So that's a problem. It's that great question mark, right? Because if Dustin Byfuglien was going to come back and you have Dustin Byfuglien, you know, I'm just saying it could change what you're able to do this season potentially.
Theoretically it could. On paper it could. But he's not coming back. I mean, I'm sorry. It's just not going to. It's February 1st. There's no indication he's skated at all since the end of last year. And people who are
we do know that he skated at least once because he was here in Winnipeg. Remember,
right? Finally,
for that first day of impromptu.
That's right. That unofficial start to, you know, when the guys come into town a few days
just ahead of training camp.
Yeah, well, I mean, he Dustin Byfuglien is not going to be a realistic option for this team this season.
Yeah, I agree. I just think that you need to have that resolution one way or the other.
I think you know that. If you think that he might be, if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff and you're still thinking that Byfuglien might be a legitimate opportunity or a legitimate option, where are you basing that on?
Well, I don't think he is. Well, look, and ultimately, but the problem is we're left with speculation because we don't know the kind of conversation he's having with Byfuglien or his agent. So, right. I mean, the reality is he could be in some super secret, you know, lab being tested and all this stuff and on the ice. We don't know that. You know, I mean, it's reasonable right now what you're suggesting. I'm simply saying that there's that question mark because we don't actually know what his status is in terms of whether he's on the ice or not.
Fair enough.
That's all I'm saying.
A couple comments coming in via Twitter and text message. Ty and LaBrokery via Twitter. This one was funny. Does Nyku have a hearing or a phone call with the NHL today to discuss his vicious slash on Brad Marchand?
I mean, that was so ticky-tack. That was terrible.
He would have been better off to lick him. That was a funny one from Ty and LaBrokery. Comment coming in also via text message. Send your text to 129090. Was it Tuukka Rask that really stopped the Jets' power play? Or was it Paul Maurice being stubborn on only playing the top unit? The top unit looked really predictable on the power play. Also, the top unit played 80% of the first 8 minutes of the second period when all that power play time was happening. You'd think the second unit would at least get some substantial minutes, but no, they didn't. So that texter being a little bit upset about the deployment of the top unit at the expense of the second unit. I tend to agree with him a little bit there. I thought the second unit should have had maybe a little more run after that first unit looked a little passive, especially in the 5-on-3, the first 5-on-3.
He's upset, but he's not upset as Dwayne from Buffalo.
No, Dwayne from Buffalo. If you haven't heard the call from Dwayne from Buffalo, we'll play that in hour number 3. Dwayne certainly got a lot off his chest in that call.
I listened to that rant and I was just like, it was epic.
It was a very good rant. We'll play it coming up in hour number 3. When we come back, though, Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press joins us for more discussion about the Jets and last night's loss to the Buffalo Sabres. The Boston Bruins. You screwed me up, Dave.
Sorry.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Mr. Lube, Winnipeg Jets game day, and your home of the Jets. TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number 1. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mindell, Dave Minuk with you in studio. We're part of Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets game day. Lots of good conversation occurring via Twitter at Illegal Curve. Lots of good conversation occurring via text message. Send your text to 1290.90. And of course, our website. There's always a lot of good conversation happening there. That's available at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Winnipeg Free Press, he's a good friend of ours. He probably can't get enough of us this weekend between last night, this morning, and later on tonight. Mike McIntyre joins us on the line. Mike, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Morning, guys. Shout out to Ezzy Margarita as well.
Yeah. Did he pathetically text you for a shout out too? Because he did that for us and we're not giving him one.
No, but when you just said about good conversation going on Twitter, I assumed you weren't talking about his tweets.
No, his tweets are terrible always. No matter if he's in Winnipeg or if he's overseas, as he is at the moment.
Haven't you guys blocked him, or did you unblock him?
I blocked him personally.
I'm not blocking.
I blocked him years ago. I actually blocked him on text message as well, which is something I didn't know I could do, but that made my life a lot easier also.
You'll have to show me how that works.
My pleasure there, Mike. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Jets and, you know, last night's contest, a very entertaining one at Bell MTS Place. Obviously the home side on the wrong side of the ledger for the hometown's perspective. But, you know, I look at last night's game and I look at sort of the underlying numbers. And I know it's only one game and I know it's, you know, a very small sample size. But you look at the Jets and you look at against a juggernaut Boston Bruins team, and the Jets, you know, are dominating on the Corsi and they have the better expected goals, and they have, you know, a lot of the underlying numbers are to their advantage. Where did that performance come from, and is that a fundamental change in how the Jets are going to approach the last 30 games of the season, or do you think that's just an aberration of an effort?
Well, I think where it came from is a place of absolute desperation. You had a rested team in the Jets, you know, coming off the break, so the energy meter was on full. And they know the situation, right? They can see where they are in the standings and how they're falling and falling behind here. So I think it came from a place of desperation. I don't think, even when this team's been struggling, I certainly have never doubted their give-a-damn, you know, meter, if you will. I think this team does care. And I think most nights the effort level has been there. It's just the execution isn't always the case. So I think last night you saw the effort level sort of push to overdrive. But once again, the execution just wasn't there. And the end result is sort of a frustratingly similar one for the Jets, in that, you know, I guess unlike some games earlier in the season where they were the ones kind of on the wrong end of a lot of the underlying metrics and yet still came away with a win. Last night was an example where they're kind of all over the place and probably deserved for sure a point, if not two, and yet they get nothing to show for it. And, you know, the frustration continues to mount, and I suppose the desperation goes up even more now. The thing I wonder, guys, I mean, I don't know how any team can play 82 games the way the Jets played last night. That I think there's a heavy cost that comes to playing as hard as they did last night. And then you sort of throw in the fact that they get no result and you wonder, well, what is that cost? Like, is this going to be the ultimate letdown now? And of course, they get to go right back at it tonight. I'm very curious to see what this team looks like coming out tonight, because they absolutely, you know, busted their butts for 60 minutes last night, and it's just got to be crushing to get no result out of it. And you almost feel like that could be a bit of a turning point, if you will, that things can go one of two directions out of that. I mean, either they come out again and play just as hard as they did last night, although that's going to be difficult, you know, 24 hours later, or it's such a crushing loss that it almost saps the will out of this team. And I'm curious to see which way it goes.
You know, Mike, we're just over 3 weeks away from the trade deadline, so I'm going to ask you to put on your prognostication hat, because there's been reports that the Jets are looking for a top four defenseman, although, as Drew just pointed out in the last segment, what team isn't looking for a top four defenseman? But are you seeing this Jets team and the way they're constructed and what they're likely to be able to do if they squeak into the playoffs as a team that will be actively, you know, looking for making a trade this ahead of the trade deadline, like a big one? Or do you think that they're going to stand pat?
Yeah, I think they're going to mostly stand pat. And, you know, they're almost more into a territory of being sellers, although I don't think they have a whole lot that they could sell off. I mean, they have a few guys, of course, that'll be UFAs, but mostly fringe pieces. Maybe you get a couple draft picks back. And let's face it, I mean, with the way the injuries are happening with this team, I don't know that they can afford to sell anything off just because they need as many bodies as they can get. I mean, they seem to lose defensemen or forwards almost every game. Matthew Perreault now goes down last night. You know, who knows how long he's going to be out. I suspect we'll get an update very shortly. Paul Maurice is speaking this morning. So, you know, I just think at this point, you know what, you pretty much know what you have with this group. And I just don't think there's, this is not a group, I don't think that you, that's one move away from kind of being right there. I think you kind of have to take the temperature of the situation. And, you know, I'm not saying the Jets need to rebuild. I don't think at all we're going into a rebuild here, but I think there needs to be a retooling. And I think that probably happens in the summer, whether it's through free agency or you do a big move then. I just don't see it happening at this point in time. I mean, we're just over three weeks away now from the trade deadline. And, you know, even if the Jets were able to put a few wins together here over these next 3 weeks and kind of still stay right in the running, I still don't think that that's something where you'd mortgage the future by any means. I can't see trading a first round pick. It's a pretty deep draft this year by all accounts. You know, so I just don't think the Jets are going to do a whole lot. Certainly nothing like we've seen the last two trade deadlines.
Mike McIntyre is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets game day. The Jets back in action tonight to face the St. Louis Blues. A game, of course, you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. Puck drop shortly after 6 p.m. this evening. Mike, did Paul Maurice err in not using his second power play unit a little bit more often during the course of all those power plays in the second period?
Yeah, I think so, because the first power play unit, I mean, I think we could see the Bruins kind of had them figured out, right? Mm-hmm. They're pretty predictable with what they do. And there's times it works. And, you know, there's other times like last night where it doesn't. Now, that being said, they certainly had a ton of possession. I mean, they did ring a couple posts, Patrick Laine, both of them. On separate power plays there. So, I mean, it was close to being successful. But as the old saying goes, you know, close only counts in what, horseshoes and hand grenades. Like, yeah,
that's how I started the show this morning.
Uh-huh. So, you know, it was almost there, but almost isn't good enough at this point. And for sure, you know, I was looking at the power play minutes. I mean, I think Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, those guys, like, they had over 8.5 minutes of power play time last night, which is incredible. And so, yeah, I mean, you've got a second unit. It maybe doesn't have nearly the same weapons on it, but, you know, maybe just a different look might have turned the trick on a night where all you really needed, guys, was one out of those six chances, including almost 2 minutes of 5-on-3. You pop one, and it's, you know, an entirely different game.
You know, Mike, for anybody who's in business, there's a motto: the customer is always right. And you wrote about that, and I'm stealing that line actually from the first line of your column this week. And, you know, the Jets sent out an email to their season ticket base, as well as the Moose season ticket base, about what they're planning on doing for the fan base. So you wrote about it. What do you think of the move, and what do you think the reaction, or what has the reaction been from fans about this move?
Well, let me start by saying that the best move the organization can make to enhance the in-game experience and continue to sell the product is to have more games like last night. Mm-hmm. And I realize that's something that's a little harder to control. But the fact is, you know, that to me, that game last night was absolutely entertaining. And yeah, the Jets didn't come away with the 2 points, so I'm sure a lot of fans go home upset. But I mean, I defy anybody that was there last night to say that they weren't entertained by the product. Like, that, you had a team that was going all out in the Jets, and you have a powerhouse in the Bruins, and the game kind of had everything, right? Physicality, fights, great scoring chances, great saves. I mean, I guess all that was missing was a ton of goals, but that was as entertaining a 2-1 game as you'll see. So that's a good first step. I think that will do more than 30% reduced beers to sell the product. Mm-hmm. We just haven't seen a whole lot of games like that too often this year. You know, to me, the games have been dull at times, and maybe some of that has to do with so many weekday games versus weekends. Like last night was probably enhanced a bit by the fact it was a Friday night. You had the Bruins in town, so you have a lot of their fans in the building, and it was just a great overall experience. Now, as for the reductions and, you know, only raising season tickets an average of 2.1, I've seen a lot of frustration, guys. I mean, I certainly saw and heard it before the announcement, and I've even seen and heard it since, because it sounds like they also did some other things, like maybe some other prices went up. Mm-hmm. And I've heard from some season ticket holders who actually say they're getting a much bigger increase than 2.1%. That's just a blended average, of course. So some people are saying, oh, it's smoke and mirrors, you know, that this isn't exactly what it was touted as being. I think the key is to remember they were talking blended average ticket price of 2.1, and the price, the items that they said were being reduced have been reduced. I think the on-ice projection is a great move. I mean, I travel around the league, and to me, that really enhances, you know, getting everybody pumped up at the beginning of the game, the player introductions, and even during the intermissions. That's a step that I think in 2020 you have to have. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. But again, at the end of the day, to me, it's about the team on the ice more than anything, and the compete level and the entertainment level. And more games like last night, I think, will go a long way, much longer than anything else.
Last question for you, Mike. Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press joins us. We're part of Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets game day. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. With Matthew Perreault, I'm going to assume he's going to be out of the lineup at least tonight, and who knows about going forward. Left the game, obviously, after that big body check yesterday in the Jets offensive zone. Who would you call up and sort of give regular time to from the Manitoba Moose? We know that Logan Shaw is, I think, the next is the 13th right. guy in the press box right now. But who do you keep up sort of as in the long term answer if Perreault is out for more than just, you know, a game?
Well, I'm in the camp, guys, that thinks you need to see what you have in Christian Vesalainen at this point. I know they called him up just before the end of that road trip. Mm-hmm. Before the break, and in fact, Paul Maurice more or less said that he was going to play one of the two games, and then he didn't play them. You need to know where this guy is at this point. And the more we sort of see this as maybe a bit of a lost season, I think there's some things still that can be accomplished. And one of those, to me, is to see if you have a player in Christian Vesalainen at the NHL level. And so, you know, I think right now you've got Mason Appleton playing in your top six. There's now an opening in the third line. You know, does Jansen Harkins move up, and do you go with Bork, Shore, and Shaw, which is a line that we saw as a fourth line earlier this year? I mean, so now you've got what, Kopp, Roslovic, Harkins maybe as your third line. They could do some other things there as well. But to me, and I know Vesalainen and Dave watches the Moose closer than anybody in this town, so I know he had a slow start for sure. It sounds like he's been coming on a little bit here lately, but I do think this is a guy who's played just 5 NHL games, and they were the first 5 basically of last season. To me, Christian Vesalainen is a guy you want to get up here as soon as possible. Throw him in the lineup. Don't stick him on a fourth line role. Put him in your top 9, see what he can do over not just one game, but give him a bit of a run just to get a better sense of what you have.
Mike McIntyre covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. Mike, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you in, about 9 hours or so.
9 hours, yeah, you bet, guys.
Take care, Mike. Thanks very much. When we come back, we discuss Dustin Byfuglien. Does he have trade value approaching the trade deadline? That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve as part of Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You know, is he a valuable enough asset to the Winnipeg Jets whereby we do want to insert him into the lineup because we think he can help us in the playoffs? And, you know, we'll worry about the settlement. We'll deal with the arbitration. Let's just push forward here and not worry about the trade deadline. You know, he has a modified no trade clause, so he had to submit a list. So there's a lot of decisions that would have to be made once Dustin Byfuglien decides, when he decides, that he's healthy enough to give it another go, and he's not at that point yet.
Now, you might be saying that it's a recent clip. It's actually not that recent a clip. It's from January 8th of this year, about 3 or so weeks ago, when the Jets and the Leafs played in Toronto. Darren Dreger talking about Dustin Byfuglien. A lot of chatter this week about what potentially Dustin Byfuglien could fetch on the trade market as we approach the trade deadline. I want to talk about that. I also want to sort of throw my hands up in the air and say, what makes you think you're going to be able to get anything in a trade for Dustin Byfuglien at this point in time? Maybe in the summer, but right now I find the entire concept to be a little bit peculiar. In any event, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk with you in studio. We're part of Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets game day, the Jets and the Blues. You know, that's coming up in about, a little more than 8 hours time from now, a back-to-back situation for both teams. The Jets falling last night to the Boston Bruins, the Blues falling last night in Edmonton to the Oilers. This segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Reich and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So let me ask you this, Dave. Mm-hmm. You sort of heard my preamble there. Does Dustin Byfuglien have any trade deadline value 3 weeks plus 2 days ahead of the trade deadline right now?
Well, the answer obviously is no. Because until he's actually shown someone that he can skate and be a useful tool on the ice, why are you trading for Dustin Byfuglien?
Or that he's got any interest in playing in the NHL.
Well, sure, but they kind of go hand in hand, right?
Sure,
like if he's showing that he's skating, then obviously he's showing some interest in playing in the NHL this season. But it's like trying to sell someone some magic beans. Like, why would any GM in their right mind buy on a player?
You're going to get this impactful 50-point defenseman who's physical and can change the game. Or he might not play.
Well, that's, yeah. So, I mean, like, it really just doesn't make a lot of sense to me why you would think to trade Dust. I mean, I know Marat had something up at The Athletic talking about it, and, you know, there's a lot of chatter about it. But again,
it's not just Marat. It's throughout the hockey world that everyone's still pointing to this presence of Dustin Byfuglien as a trade chip potentially for the Winnipeg Jets or somebody that other teams are targeting 3 weeks ahead of the trade deadline. And I just don't. I know people have, column inches and that they need to fill and ink needs to be spilled about it. But this one to me is just bizarre.
Well, I mean, and again, I think it's a function of the unknown. And it's what's going to define the 2019-20 season here in Winnipeg is this never ending. It's like the never ending story, because really since day one of training camp, or just obviously just one day before day one of training camp when he was given a leave of absence.
Mm-hmm.
And I was even writing,
nothing nefarious.
No, and I was writing about it and I thought to myself, I was looking back at stuff I'd written and I thought to myself, like, what a bizarre saga this has been the entire season. And it's crazy because, like, anytime I write Dustin Byfuglien's name on the website, it's just like a magnet. And the crazy part is, like, I don't use salacious headlines anyways, but I don't even need to. Just because, like, it's just such a hot topic.
It's the cloud that hangs over everything.
And that's what I mean. That's why it's become the it's not the topic of the day, it's the topic of the year.
Sure.
And it's just, it's hung there like a specter, right? And so, I heard Dreger and Ferraro were talking about it on their podcast, and Ferraro was like, well, you know, you have to make it, you know, it's just, he said, 99.9% of the time I'll side with the player. He goes, but this is one of those times where I'm siding with the team, meaning
You need to make a decision. Like something we need, there needs some resolution here. And so to me, I think if I'm the team, I have to be thinking to myself, well, how, because it just doesn't look good. You can't just throw your hands up in the air. And we know the cap situation isn't as tight now as it was before, because even if you have to take his salary on, you still have some.
They got
some
salary cap space ahead of the deadline.
That's right. So they've got the deadline if they needed to make a move. It's not like they're right up against it with Buffalo's salary.
As of today, they're
like $13 million, right?
As of today, their cap space at the deadline would be, their deadline cap space would be $21 million.
Right.
And their cap space today would be $13.7 million.
Right.
So you got plenty of, if you want to go out and get a $10 million player, you got enough room to do
that's
it.
That's right. So you're not doing it. That's right. There is that ability. But I'm just saying that, okay, to your original question.
Yeah.
Is any GM in the NHL saying to themselves, am I Dustin Byfuglien away? You know, again, you're only saying it if he's skating. So that's why for the Jets, you know, when Dreger comes on January 3rd and says he's at the point where he's going to test his ankle. Now, originally, if you remember, I believe Dreger was one of the ones who said it was 4 months from when he had the surgery.
Right.
Which would have been a February return anyway. So
in and around now.
The timeline is actually still what he originally suggested. But having said that.
But he would have been skating already before now.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. I think it was just the timeline for his return, which was pegged for February. I'm simply suggesting that it was the third that he was supposed to test it. And then 3 weeks later, he still hasn't, to the best of Dreger's knowledge, hasn't tested it. So I'm not suggesting that it's a crazy notion, but I just think that it really doesn't make a lot of sense if you haven't had, if a GM can't say to their owner, oh yeah, we're going to get Byfuglien. Okay. But what are we getting for him? Like, are we getting a player who can actually play in the NHL this season? Cause otherwise, why are we trading for him?
The whole talk about Dustin Byfuglien as a potential trade deadline acquisition is perplexing at best. Maybe I'll be proven wrong. It certainly wouldn't be the first time, but in this instance, I just find it to be almost a non-starter. The guy hasn't skated, as far as we know, and so why would anybody acquire a player who clearly hasn't played hockey in a number of months? Time will tell. When we come back, we discuss Jock Roslovic, his season. What's his future in terms of a Winnipeg Jets? Is he a guy that the Jets could potentially dangle in a trade scenario, either at the deadline or entering the start of next season? Much more to come. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live as part of Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Now for Dahlstrom, lead pass to center ice. Now it's a breakaway here for Roslovic, moving in, shoots and scores. Jack Roslovic, with dashing speed, took a three-way passing play from the Jets outside their own zone. It was a touch by Lowry in between. A breakaway goal for Roslovic, and it's 2-1 Winnipeg.
Our buddy Paul Edmonds with the call. Jack Roslovic scoring for the Winnipeg Jets. Had been playing a top six role for the bulk of the season. Last night played on a third line role. Mason Appleton taking his spot in the top six. We'll see what the future has in store, as Matthew Perreault, of course, left the game last night injured. We'll see how that adjusts the Jets' forward lines. The Jets meeting with the media right now. We'll hopefully get some audio from Jets head coach Paul Maurice that we'll bring to you before the end of the broadcast at 12 noon this morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk with you in studio. Producer Sean Asor doing his great job behind the board. This segment of the program brought to you by our good friends Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So, Dave, Jack Roslovic, 9 goals, 10 assists, 19 points so far this season. He certainly is on pace to set a career high in terms of goals and points at the NHL level. bridge contract for him. He's an RFA at season's end. Does it seem like it's pretty clear that this is a guy who's going to be getting something in the lines of a 2 or maybe a 3 year deal to see what the Jets still have in him and if he's got another level that he can achieve at the NHL level?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think that this is a player. Look, he's homegrown. You know, he drafted him in 2015. He's part of that vaunted 2015 draft class. Mm-hmm. He's a player, obviously, that, you know, did a lot at the AHL level for the Manitoba Moose. He's not a prolific goal scorer. I mean, if Jack Roslovic becomes a 20 goal scorer, that's probably, you know, 20 to 22 goals. That's probably going to be around where you're going to see Jack Roslovic in the NHL, given the opportunity. And, you know, yeah, he's already matched his goal total from last season in 25 less games. But as someone pointed out to me correctly, that he's obviously getting more opportunity. His ice time is up quite a bit over last year. And as you just touched on, Drew, he's a guy who was for quite a bit playing second line minutes with the, you know, on the Jets. So the opportunity has been presented to Jack Roslovic. But, you know, to me, he's a player that I wouldn't be selling on right now. I know that, again,
because let me stop you there. Because he's the guy that everyone sort of points to on the Jets roster as the guy who might bring back the most in a trade,
right,
if you wanted to acquire, not necessarily at the deadline, but even in the summer, that top four defenseman, somebody to fill that defensive, that hole on your defense. They point to Roslovic as the guy who's got the NHL experience. He's still got theoretically upside to go that could bring somebody back that can help the Jets on the back end.
Sure. And look, if the talk is Nikolaj Ehlers versus Jack Roslovic, then you're going to trade Jack Roslovic over Ehlers. Ehlers talk was kooky talk to begin with.
It's,
you know,
still kooky talk.
You know, and so you're sitting there, especially now that he's a fighter as well, you really can't afford to lose that aspect of
his
game.
Does he have the most majors? I guess he didn't get a major last night for the fight.
No.
So
no.
He should have. It was a fight. I don't understand why.
Yeah, they dropped the gloves.
They handed out double minors for fighting last night for some reason.
It was bizarre. But anyways.
Yeah, he might be atop the Jets in
fights. Might actually. You're right.
I'm going to look that up while you're talking.
Okay. But the fact is that, you know, I look at Jack Roslovic and he's a player that he played center for most of his career, you know, with the Moose at Miami. He played, I think, the wing when he was in junior in the States, maybe with the U.S. National under 17 and 18 programs. But primarily, you know, used as a center, obviously, towards the 2017-18 end of that season when he was with, not end of that season, but when he was with the Moose prior to getting recalled. I think that was in December when Mark Scheifele got injured. We saw Pascal Vincent putting him on the wing. So you knew that the Jets were saying, look, you're going to come up here. You're not going to be a center. You're going to be a wing based on what we have at center depth. But, you know, slowly but surely, maybe they'll transition him there. And we know he's capable of doing it. So I look at Jack Roslovic as potential successor to someone like Brian Little, you know, a defensively gifted center, you know, a guy who can put the puck in the net, a talented passer. So I wouldn't just kind of toss him aside quickly. And again, can you maybe fix this Jets team from within with, you know, as we touched on with some of the young defensive prospects that are coming in, so you don't need to? Because again, you've got a really dynamic core. And we've gotten away from this notion, or we've tried to, and I don't say we, I mean like the NHL has, mm-hmm, in the sense that you don't have a top six. You're supposed to really have a top nine.
Right.
And in theory, if the Jets were deeper, your Lowry line would be your fourth line.
No question.
And Roslovic or Kopp would be on your third line.
Can Roslovic, I mean, I agree with you that it's more of a top nine in terms of offense than a top six. And mm-hmm, right, and you know, not on this Jets team as it happens, because right, the bottom six for the Jets has been sort of a wasteland in terms of offense. If you were to look at it in the old school mentality of a top six and a bottom six,
mm-hmm,
can Jack Roslovic play in that top six role, or is he better suited as that third line? Like, what is his ceiling? Is he a top six forward?
Absolutely.
In your mind?
100%. I think the fact of the matter is that there's no, this is the guy who was so dominant at the, like, people have to understand, and I know the AHL is different than the NHL, but the AHL is still the second best league in the world. It's better, or on par maybe with the KHL, whatever you want to call it. I haven't watched enough KHL to be an expert on that to suggest that one way or another. But the fact is, the AHL is very good, and Jack Roslovic was the best player in the AHL when he was playing.
Why hasn't that translated into exceptional play at
the
NHL
level? I'll tell you why, because he was the top line player. And he was given that opportunity to be the guy on the team. And when you're a young guy in the NHL generally, with the exception, and there's exceptions, Patrick Laine obviously was given that opportunity. And Kyle Connor was given that opportunity. And I think largely it was twofold. I think one, they didn't really have that need to necessarily throw him into that top six at that time. And I think that they just said, look, we're going to slowly introduce this kid into the lineup. So can he play? And you know, Kenny, going to The Athletic as well, Kenny Wiebe had an article talking about reuniting the top two picks or top first round picks from 2015, Kyle Connor and Jack Roslovic. And I've always said, and I said it earlier in the segment, Jack Roslovic isn't a goal scorer. Jack Roslovic is an excellent passer, though, and he can dish that puck. You know, in his season with the Moose, he had 35 assists in 65 games. I mean, he's a passer. So he's almost always been a guy who has more assists. In fact, I don't think that there's been one season in his career, whether pro or amateur, where he's had more goals than he's had assists. So he's a guy who's going to facilitate, and he can get you that puck. Is he as good a passer as, you know, Mark Scheifele, Blake Wheeler yet? Maybe not. But I think he's got the talent. I think that, you know, I have a tendency to look at players long term, and I just don't think you want to sell. I'm not saying sell low, but I'm just saying, and I get that he's your asset. He is the guy every article points to as the guy who's expendable in theory. I'm putting that in quotes, which you people listening,
it's radio, it's not TV.
I'm aware, okay. But that's why I'm explaining it. But the fact of the matter is, to me, Jack Roslovic is a player that you want to build around with that young core of Ehlers, Line A, Kyle Connor, Mark Scheifele. I just don't think you can afford to trade away a piece like Jack Roslovic.
Do you think his trade request, we remember that last year at the end of the season, mm-hmm. he switched agents and then he came out.
Claude Lemieux.
Yeah. You know, that you know, he had a request because he wasn't happy with his deployment on the Jets last year. Obviously, his deployment has increased significantly this year, playing, you know, in and around 15 minutes a game. Is that trade request gone to bed? Is it asleep, or do you think it's still sort of underneath the surface that might bubble up again?
You know, it's a fair question, Drew. I really think that stuff is, I mean, he didn't make it public, right? Like, it wasn't like the player made it public and was just like frustrated and was repeatedly asking for it every year that he's been in Winnipeg. I think the fact of the matter is that you want players who want more, and you want them to be, now you'd want them to be demanding it, not necessarily from a trade perspective. So we don't know how that went down. I don't have any firsthand knowledge of that, of course, but I would suggest that, again, if given the opportunity, then why would you want to be elsewhere, right? Like, if you can be seen as a top six guy in this organization, and if from Jack Roslovic's perspective, that would be for the next, you know, 6 to 8 years, realistically, mm-hmm. then why not take that opportunity from a young, in theory, young and up and coming team, right? That he was going to be a big part of it. And he's grown with these guys, right? I mean, that's the other thing that people forget is, you know, when they say, oh, it's easy to, you know, and Haley Sullivan of The Athletic wrote an article about this topic of, you know, the trade deadline and what it does generally for older players in terms of guys who have families and the idea of having to move on from a team. But, you know, this is a guy who was drafted by the organization, played with some of these guys on the Moose, now playing with them on the Jets. I just think he wanted an opportunity. I think he was just saying, I'm being wasted playing in a fourth line role on the Jets.
Let me ask you this question.
Sure.
The Jets come the offseason, decide we need to trade a young winger for a top four defenseman.
Okay.
Whatever. They need to trade a young winger.
Sure.
Would they trade? Who do you think that they would be more likely to trade? Christian Vesalainen or Jack Roslovic?
Well, I mean, Vesalainen. No, I mean, Vesalainen is that unknown. And again, he's been playing better of late for sure for the Manitoba Moose. I still think he just sometimes takes a little long for his decision making. He's got a phenomenal shot. I mean, he's not obviously Line A, but, you know, I often joked in his first year when he was with the Moose what it would look like having Vesalainen on one side and Line A on the other side, because they're just so dynamic on a power play and they both have such good shots. But, again, I wouldn't easily give up on Christian Vesalainen. Like, he has the tools. Now, has he put it together in a complete way? No, but I mean, again, one thing people don't really necessarily understand when you just look at the numbers, you don't watch the player, is Christian Vesalainen is being relied upon in a lot of different ways down with the Moose. You know, coach Pascal Vincent has given him opportunity to play on the penalty kill. He's given him opportunity to play on the power play. He's given him opportunity at 5-on-5 to play on the top line. He wasn't necessarily playing on the top line. Like, really, and that's the other thing. You know, you look at his numbers, you're like, well, why? Well, because for a while he was playing with Cole Meyer and JC LaPon. Now, those guys are diggers. Those guys aren't necessarily pure goal scorers. They're not the top line. You know, it's not the Seth Griffith, Logan Shaw opportunity to be up with guys who are good passers and good scorers. It was more just to learn the game in the North American arena. And I think, you know, Christian Vesalainen is slowly but surely gaining that. I mean, does he have the weapons to be an NHL threat? I think Mike makes a good point. I think it's something, especially if this becomes, quote, a lost season, that's something you're going to want to evaluate. But I wouldn't easily give up on him. But I'm saying if you have something that you know can play at the NHL level versus a player who you don't yet know, well, obviously you're going to take the bird in hand versus the, what is it, the half dozen?
The
two in the bush?
Yeah.
So I would say the Vesalainen is the more expendable of those two.
There you go. When we come back, we discuss Matthew Perreault. We'll ask you this question. When was the last time Matthew Perreault scored a goal? We'll come back with that answer. It might surprise you. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Mr. Lube, Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Lowry for Andrew Kopp. Back at the line for Pullman, near side Morrissey. Morrissey deflected, score! Matthew Perreault up in the high slot, gets a stick and puts it up under the bar.
A rare occurrence this year, a goal by Matthew Perreault of the Winnipeg Jets. He's obviously not going to play tonight. Paul Maurice came out just now, announced that. Perreault still undergoing evaluation, still undergoing tests, out of the lineup for tonight's game between the Jets and the St. Louis Blues after he took that big hit in the Bruins zone last night in the Jets 2-1 defeat. The Jets and the Blues tonight, 6 p.m. puck drop here on TSN Radio 1290. It's part of Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets game day. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Across from me, Dave Minuk. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Dave, I asked you that question. That goal that you just heard was from November 16th against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Ooh. When was the last time Matthew Perreault scored a goal for the Winnipeg Jets?
Well, I'm assuming that.
No, it wasn't then. It wasn't then.
I don't know.
November 23rd was the last time Matthew Perreault has scored a goal for the Winnipeg Jets this year.
Is that good?
No, that's not good. In that time, in the last 22 games that he has played, he has 5 points. He has not scored in, well, let me do some quick, November to December is 1 month, December to January, 2 months, so about
10 weeks.
Yeah, 10 weeks he's not scored a goal.
9 weeks.
Why make an argument for the Winnipeg Jets not buying out Matthew Perreault in the offseason?
And it's $4.125 million?
His contract is $4.125 million.
Mm-hmm.
The Jets would save, pardon me, his contract is $4 million even. The Jets would save $2.6 million next season. Why would they not buy him out?
I mean, it's a valid question, Drew. Of course, it becomes a function of Matthew Perreault is still a fairly versatile player. Now, obviously, he's not putting the puck in the net, you know, which is obviously an important aspect of his game. I mean, his numbers really aren't off of what he had. That's significantly off. They're slightly below.
He's on pace for his worst right. season in the NHL.
Yeah, about 20-something points, 28 points-ish, 27 points.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it hasn't been a good year for Matthew Perreault. There's no sugarcoating it. You know, he's got only 6 goals on the season. You know, he had 15 last year. So, I mean, it hasn't been a great one for him. But I look, and we talked about it, in the last segment, in terms of opportunity and players, you know, Matthew Perreault, I still think, is a player who helps out your team overall. You know, he's a pretty tenacious guy. Obviously, you know, he's had some bad luck in terms of the hits and what they've done to him. But, you know, it becomes a function of who's filling that role for you next year, you know, and do you need the money?
The Jets are projected right now to have $8 million of cap space entering the offseason.
Okay. But that's with Buffalo, though.
That is with Buffalo,
right?
Admittedly, that is with Buffalo.
So to your following the same logic that you were
employing, that his salary would be off the books,
right? So I guess what I'm getting at is, what is the gain? You know, I mean, Matthew Perreault is the 32-year-old, so he's not young by any stretch of the imagination in today's NHL.
Mm-hmm.
But do you like having that veteran presence on when you've already got a number? You got Appleton. You're likely going to have Harkins in the lineup next year.
Mm-hmm. Maybe Vesalainen.
So I'm just simply suggesting that he adds a bit of veteran presence, and, you know, ingenuity, and he brings something to the table, even if it isn't necessarily goal scoring. And, you know, maybe in a slightly modified role, you know, you've got Mathieu Perreault playing on the fourth line because, you know, look, again, there's nothing traditional about the way the Jets have used their fourth line, but maybe you go back to that. And again, like I said, it's in terms of, I look at Adam Lowry and I don't see a third line center.
I agree with you. He just doesn't have the offensive capabilities to be a third line center.
So I say, but he'd be a phenomenal fourth line center.
I would have no problem with so Adam Lowry as your fourth line center.
I guess you look at it and you think to yourself, is this an opportunity for the Jets? I mean, it may be a little bit high priced, but to have some, you know, Mathieu Perreault could play a defensive game. I'm simply suggesting that it allows you to have some of your young guys given an opportunity to produce on that third line.
You're saying that your young guys, again, you have a head coach who doesn't particularly like playing his young guys in significant
roles. May not have an option, though, but go on.
You're saying play your young guys in a higher role where they might be more offensively inclined.
That's right.
A Vessel line who's not going to be, you're not relying on him to be a defensive stalwart. And then your fourth line, as opposed to this year where it's very much, you know, play 45 seconds. If nothing happens, it's a successful 45 seconds. Whereas your fourth line could maybe be more of a, your fourth line would be better than your opponent's fourth line.
That's what And I think that's what you're ideally looking for, right? I think you're looking at, look, it's one thing what we talk about with the Jets is that you've got some gifted forwards, and we don't know. Look, we don't know what David Gustafson is going to be like. He still hasn't been playing with the Moose yet. He missed last night's game. He's wearing non-contact still, so he hasn't had an opportunity. But we know, obviously, the Jets like what he's able to do.
Yes.
So he's a player that you could be relying on.
If you looked at if the Jets had a depth chart for next season, you would expect Gustafson to be on it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So I just sit there and I think to myself, like, you know, is Perreault a luxury you can afford? And I look at the Jets' salary cap next year. And again, right now, it doesn't look like, we don't know what's going to happen with Dustin Byfuglien.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you might have quite a bit of salary. And now, who do you have to sign next year? You have Jack Roslovic.
Yeah.
Well, he's not going up huge. I mean, he's going to go up, but he's not going to go, like you said, it's most likely a bridge.
It's something Jansen Harkins, in the $2 to $2.5 million
Jansen
range.
Harkins. Another RFA.
Yeah.
Again, not. I mean, look, he's having a phenomenal season in the AHL. Has as many points in 30 games as he had in 71 last year with the Moose.
For Jansen Harkins, I could totally see a two-year deal where the first year is actually a two-way deal and the second year is a guaranteed one-way deal at the NHL level.
And then the third 2015-er who's up is Mason Appleton.
Right. So those are not going to cost you a lot.
No, not going to cost you a lot. So what I'm getting at is you've got guys who aren't costing you a ton.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the movement. Now, you could be saying, well, don't you want to use that money for X, whether that's another top winger, whether that's another top.
Well, if you take the Kulikov money that's coming off the books and you take that and you apply that to a Travis Hamonic, for example, you're saying that you don't think the cap crunch is significant enough where you have to jettison Mathieu Perreault for the 2.6 savings next year.
Well, especially because I just think that you look at what, I mean, he's a guy who kind of bleeds his team.
Sure.
He really is. Like, people could say what you will, but the guy loves being in Winnipeg, and he's embraced it. And I just don't know that you necessarily jettison, to use your word, someone like that. And I'm not saying you do it out of a sense of loyalty. I just think he's still a player who can be an effective player if you use him in the right role. If you use him with Adam Lowry and, you know, Mason Appleton, or to be honest with you, Jansen Harkins.
Sure.
Now, that'd be a terrific fourth line.
You'd have a lot of energy certainly coming from Harkins and Perreault, who are both sort of roadrunner guys who get in there on the forecheck.
Absolutely.
And everything else.
And
Lowry would be your, all three of them are defensively responsible.
That's my whole point.
Yeah.
So you know, just think about what that could give for your team. And I just don't know that the quote cap savings, especially on a team that isn't cap crunched, as far as I can, you know, look at it quickly.
As you can forecast for next season.
Without, you know, seeing something else happening. I just don't see why you would try and remove that element from your team without really having it replaceable easily enough from within.
It's a valid point.
It's a good one because he hasn't had the season that you would expect from Mathieu Perreault.
Well, he's had a bad season. I mean, you can sugarcoat it as much you want, but when Mathieu Perreault, a guy who still gets, you know, significant minutes for the most part on this team, I mean, you look at the game logs over the last, you know, month. you know, yesterday, obviously, only a little bit over 8.5 minutes, but he was injured. 13 minutes, just under 11, just under 14, just under 14, 13, you know, just under 13. I mean, this is a guy who's still playing significant minutes that should have scored or should have more than 5 assists over the last 10 weeks of hockey. And Matthew Perreault would probably be the first one to say that to you. Just interesting to see how the Jets will handle that situation as he's entering his final year of his contract and if that's an option on the table for Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff. Time will tell. When we come back, Andy Strickland is going to join us to talk about the St. Louis Blues. The Blues obviously in town tonight to face the Jets coming off a defeat last night in Edmonton. Andy Strickland up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're part of Mr. Lube Winnipeg Jets game day on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.